Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Real Expat Wives of Arabia. I'm about to have on another really great guest. Her name is Audrey Parr. She is a yoga instructor, amongst many other things. However, I'll let her tell more about that. And I want to just make a really solid point here. I have recently delved into a lot of personal practices that have been not so accepting in the Christian world. Things like yoga and crystal work and chakra work and meditation. And if you're out there and you are struggling how to combine these two things, because there's a lot of taboo, a lot of misconceptions and misinformation out there, especially in the religious world, about some of these practices. And I have found a way to align the two, and it's working for me just beautifully. And these things for me personally have been very important in my life, especially the ugliness of humanity, the sadness of this world. I have a space now that truly can help me navigate and go within and meditate and see beyond our 3D reality is. And a lot of it can be very woo-woo, and I know that. And most people at this point in my life think I've lost my mind. That's okay. The thing I want to do is communicate that, for instance, this new shooting in Texas has my heart gutted, and I was bawling this morning due to the ugliness of humanity. I've already found some peace and solace from connecting with Source, and God for me has a lot of different words, and I have now a sacred container and a space to hold these things in that I didn't have before, and yoga is a part of that. And so Audrey blessed us with this amazing yoga retreat here on our little compound near the beach. Align and Refine was the name of the retreat, and I had some really amazing self-discoveries through what she presented and the knowledge that she shared. So I would love to just hear more from her and promote her in any way I can to help other people just find this amazing solace and peace that, you know, it's hard to find these days. So come along and let's hear what she has to say.
Hello.
Miss Audrey?
Hi, how are you, Kim?
Good morning, lady. I'm good. How are you this morning?
I am doing very well. Thank you so much.
Awesome. I'm so glad you made the time to meet with me. I appreciate that.
Definitely. I think it'll be fun.
I know you're a busy lady. So I kind of did like a small intro for Miss Audrey Parr, but I wanted you to kind of go just a little bit more into what led you to Arabia.
Well, I've been teaching overseas now for over 24 years, maybe now, I think.
Wow.
So this is my fifth country that I've been teaching overseas. So I got to Arabia via, we were leaving, my husband and I, we were leaving Sudan, and we decided we wanted to venture out again and find a new place in the world. And you know how Facebook can be so helpful. So you just put it out there. The Pars are leaving Sudan. Let us know if you have a job. And a couple people that we knew worked here in Arabia contacted us about a job, and the rest was history. Like, he fast-tracked our teaching credentials and our resumes, and we met with the director and the superintendent straight away. It was great. Like, it was really, it happened really fast. We were surprised. We're like, whoa,
that was awesome. Yeah, that is. I mean, it was like a 4-month onboarding for us. How long have you been here?
This is our 11th year now in Arabia.
Wow. And prior to here, it was Sudan. And then what were the other countries?
I started in Morocco by myself right out of college. I was an intern as a PE teacher. That turned full time, which was awesome. They let me apply for the position, which was great to give me more experience. So I stayed another 2 years there. So 3 years in Morocco. Then I decided I wanted to move somewhere else. So I went to Malaysia. And then after a year there, I met my husband, and then we dated for 5 years, and then we got married in Malaysia. He is American. He is not Malaysian.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And then we kind of decided, like, once we were getting married, it'd be kind of weird to stay in the same place and like the kids not knowing what to call me, like Mrs. Parr or Miss West, like that was my previous name. And so we're like, let's move to a new place where we can just be known as the Parrs. And this was before The Incredibles came out, so that was nice. And so, yeah, then we moved to Guatemala together. Did a short
Wow.
stint there, did 2 years there, and then 3 years in Sudan, and now 11 here.
Wow. So you've been here the longest.
Correct. It is so
Yes.
easy and so nice and so comfortable here.
Right. Yeah. So Miss West spent lots of time in the eastern part of the world.
Correct.
So you were like health, like physical education, health PE, like focused, centered.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. So at what point did yoga practice come in?
Yoga came into my life in Malaysia. I was all about working out. Like I was also a college athlete. I played Division One softball, and so I was all about working out and feeling the burn and no pain, no gain. And I was on my way to a workout at my complex I was living in Malaysia, and I passed by the badminton courts, and there's these people doing yoga, and I just kind of peeked in, and I just kept walking. But the woman flagged me down and said, "Come join us! Come join us!" I
Oh.
said, "Oh, why not?" And so I went to that for twice a week, and I started to really like it. I like how it felt in my body, and so I just started to explore other types and other areas that I could go and do yoga in Malaysia, which there were a lot at that time.
Right.
And eventually, I settled in on the Ashtanga form, which is a very physical, demanding type of practice that gets your heart flowing. It's a challenging practice, I think. And I enjoyed that being an ex-athlete. I enjoy that. And I started going about 3 times a week once I found that.
Okay, and so then, like, when did you decide to go get like actual training for certification?
Well, I've wanted to do that for a long time, but unfortunately, being a school teacher, I was locked into certain times when I could do a teacher training. And most of the trainings back then, when I was starting to do it, were only in person. They were only 4 to 6 week intensives, like you had to be there every day, 8 hours a day kind of thing. And I just couldn't find a way to fit that into my schedule. So luckily, when I first started, I was a teacher anyway, as a PE teacher. And so there was people at my school, other teachers, they saw that I was doing yoga and they're like, "Well, teach us." And I was like, okay, I guess I could. Like, I'll teach you what I know and what I do. Hopefully you like it. I mean, I was a physical educator anyway, so I could guide people. I felt confident in that. And then it wasn't until I was actually living in Sudan where there was an opportunity for me where it was only over the summer. So I was able to go all summer to Thailand to be able to do this intensive on Koh Samui and finally got certified.
How
It took forever.
awesome. Oh my God, how awesome. So was it like the 300 hour or like
This one was only a 200 hour. So it was a
200
200
hour?
hour. Yeah. And then during COVID, because lovely COVID, we were locked in. So many of my favorite yoga teachers started doing their trainings online because they couldn't do them in person. So one of my favorites, Jason Crandall, he's been my teacher for years, both online and in person. He offered a 300 hour. And so over COVID, I was able to do all three modules online. Like it was semi hybrid, like some pre-recorded, some live, some question and answer. I thought it was tremendous. I thought it was so good. It was like one of the best experiences you could have for a 300 hour.
That's any and online, which,
Yes.
so no airfare involved. Nothing like, so yeah, that COVID has really, changed a lot of things and has become a blessing in a lot of ways to certain business. I mean, certain businesses had to, they had to change and adapt to survive, right?
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
So again, so things that were like, no, this can't be done online. It has to be in person. Things had to kind of shift in their, in their consideration. Like we need to consider other things to survive as a business. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it took. I mean, it's good to see that it took that turn. And I think the hybrid model is going to be around for quite a while in the yoga and fitness realm.
It allows people to get more done in less amount of time. If you take travel out of the equation, yeah, you could accomplish quite a lot without even leaving your house. So that's a pretty rad concept. So at what point did you start to entail and bring in mindfulness to the teaching, your actual, like, your teaching job, like, to the kids?
Well, I taught PE, like I taught PE forever, I felt like. I taught it in Arabia at my current school. I taught it for 6 years. I taught PE. And I kind of, I would have offer a yoga elective and we would talk a little bit about mindfulness in there. Mm-hmm. But then I got the job to teach full-time health with another woman at our school, another co-teacher. And I just brought it up to her. I said, hey, what do you think about introducing mindfulness to these kids? Because it can help them in so many ways.
Absolutely. And
at that time, I was starting in my own practice, personal practice, I was starting to get more and sit longer in meditation. And I was starting to develop and get my certification for mindfulness meditation. And I brought that proposal to her and she said, sounds great. Let's do it. How do we do this? And we just found some easy online things to follow. Like we used Mind Yeti for the kids at school. It's a nice mm-hmm. place to start. And then once the kids understood the idea of just sitting and noticing your thoughts and noticing your body, then I would like start to lead a couple here and there. Or I would start to introduce them to other styles or other ways to sit. And I feel like they really get it. There's some kids, especially sixth graders, that run into my classroom still and they're like, what time are we doing mindfulness?
Aww.
I was like, oh, you're so cute.
So you are definitely seeing that it is a benefit and it's helping. Like
yes.
It's like enhancing their experience, their character, character development.
Yeah,
it's not,
definitely.
It's not easy to sit still and focus in on your thoughts at that age, you know?
No.
So I think it's especially in middle school age. And I've said this before on my podcast, so it's like not a thing. I was a fucking train wreck from sixth grade. Like sixth grade to eighth grade was a very tumultuous time in my personal life. So I could imagine, mm-hmm. you know, if I had a guide and a teacher to kind of like help me navigate some of the craziness in my head and kind of just sit still and for a second, just like self-awareness and all yeah. those things.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, those are the ages, I mean, especially these ages, they're going through puberty, right? So you have all these hormones going through your body and you don't know why you want to cry one minute, scream the next and fight somebody the next.
I mean, absolutely.
So it's a way of just kind of letting them settle or giving them a tool so that later, once they're not in my class, they can do it. But part of it too is we journal afterwards. So I have them reflect, you know, I'm like, how does your mind feel? What thoughts came up? How did your body feel?
That's, you know, so wonderful.
What was hard today? You know, so it's like one of those things, like we just have them reflect on how it was, you know, and it's fun to be able, because I have them, I get to read their journals later. So I get to read some of their thoughts and I can kind of see the kids that struggle. I kind of look at theirs and see if I can give them any other tips to help them kind of settle a little bit more. Like you said, it's so hard to sit still, mm-hmm. you know, but that's part of the mindfulness experience. Like, oh, I'm fidgeting. Yep. Why am I fidgeting? Why do I do that? You know, like mm-hmm. just all that different thought process that goes on and letting them know that there is no one right thing to do.
Exactly.
You know, you're noticing, you're literally noticing and trying not to get caught up in the storyline.
Yeah. And not judge it. Right. Like there's right. no right or wrong. It just is what it is.
Yes.
And, you know, analyzation doesn't really have to take place. You just kind of have to create a space to let it even happen.
Exactly.
And you're providing that. So that's such a beautiful thing that you're doing. So how has, you know, like, are there plans to take it a little further for you?
There certainly is. Finally, after, you know, I was wanting to take yoga further and make it more of a business for me rather than just a side thing. Because right now I teach full-time middle school health. And then kind of like my second thing is yoga, but yoga is truly my passion. So it tends to take over a lot more of my time than it should. So it's been a while. My husband and I have been talking back and forth, and that's pretty much like my end game when I leave, when I go out, you know, when I leave Arabia, is I want to just do yoga full time. So being here has really helped us get that nest egg started, so I don't have to worry so much about the first 2 years, how they go. I can kind of experiment a little bit, but yeah, that's where I want to go. And it's actually starting to happen starting June 17th is my last work day at the school,
My
and then
goodness.
I will be full-time yoga. It still gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, that is
A
a huge,
mixture of
yes.
like excitement and fear.
Right, yeah. I'm sure there's been some major intention setting with all that. So that's so
Oh, yes.
awesome to see it play out. And then so you've got on the side, you're teaching yoga, and the following, I'm sure, is huge because you came and we blessed us. Where we live on our compound with a great weekend, whole weekend. And that was just like toes dipped in, like just a little taste, you
Right.
know. So I can't imagine, you know, I just benefited personally really a lot from that. But I was ready. I mean,
Oh.
I was ready for it. I was committed. I was ready to embrace whatever it had for me. And I had such an amazing experience. And you're truly really talented in terms of how you communicate, how you modify, how you present the different ways for people to you know, it's not like yoga marathon, you know, it's like
Right.
let's go in and see where we're at and like adjust things to fit your body, which is important because I think a lot of people, first of all, a lot of people I think are like afraid of yoga. And I don't know, like, so what is your experience with that, like in Arabia? I mean, most of us are expats, right? But like, have you had any resistance or any type of like
Let's see. I have
negative,
well, first of
like,
all, thank you for expressing how I'm so clear in my communication, because that's what I strive for. I'm glad
yes.
that you got a lot out of it and
I
it was
did.
good for you. That makes me happy. But as far as resistance to yoga, the biggest that I had was kind of like my last maybe couple years in Malaysia. They started going a little bit more fundamental and they started saying that yoga was bad. It was a pagan tradition, which it's not. Like it's your own spiritual journey. So they kind of took that way. So yoga studios were starting to kind of close, which, and
Oh.
then people were kind of like, well, I don't know if I should do yoga. And I was like, no, really, you should.
Wow.
But here in Arabia, I haven't really met any resistance. I mean,
Okay.
again, we live on an expat camp,
Exactly.
where there's a lot of expats that come, but I have quite a few Muslims and different Arabs from around the region that do come to my class.
Okay.
They may or may not participate in like any chanting that we do or that kind of thing, but I think they really enjoy it. I have quite a few regulars that come. I'm starting to get this like new little group of younger Saudi women that are starting to come to my classes, which is great.
I just got the chills. I got chills from head to toe. That is so cool.
Yeah. So I'm kind of excited that there's like this new little group starting to come up. And now that I'll have more time, I can cultivate those groups. Because a lot of times with the Muslim women, they're not as so inclined to do mixed classes. And I hesitate to close my classes to any one sex. I would like to keep them open to everyone. I like to have them mixed. If I can do smaller group classes, if they're willing to do that, then I'm so happy to open up to them and open up the world of yoga to them. So that's what I'm hoping can happen as I keep progressing here.
Yeah, I think that's a great direction to go in for sure. If you have the time, and it sounds like you will soon. So I think that's awesome. Definitely go forth with that. Well, I guess just in general, like you've spent so much time east, right? So like the Muslim tradition, the Islam religion, the culture, all these norms in the Eastern sense have been a little bit more, I guess, familiar to you. So
Correct.
when you moved, you know, to Arabia, you were just like, eh. I mean, especially coming from Sudan and
Right.
Malaysia, and so it
Morocco.
wasn't much of adjustment for you. You were probably just like, okay, I'm gonna slip right in here. Especially again, I think people don't realize how, I mean, I don't know, how would you live on a much larger compound than I, but the we do have a sense of just kind of like, oh, it's just like any other neighborhood in the US. We can walk around drive around, wear what we want. But there is like a tense of like, okay, if I have like workout booty shorts on, I'm going to wrap like a jacket around my waist before I go into the grocery store. Or if I've got a tank top on, I'm going to throw like, you know, something over my shoulders. So there's a little hint, even though we're on like a very free and open, you know, place to live. There's still a little hint of that awareness of like, okay, we're in a Muslim country.
You would hope there would be. I think in your smaller community, mm-hmm. people are more aware of that a little bit more. I think in this larger community we are, I mean, I'll go into the store and there's women straight out of a workout and tank top and booty shorts, and they just don't care. You know, and I think part of that's that little rebellion of, you know, I'm told so much what to do here. I know on my compound, I can wear this into my grocery store. So
it's true.
I think there's a little bit of that. But for the most part, people are pretty, pretty good. Like if I'm coming from a yoga class and I have, you know, my leggings on and a tank top, I'll always throw something over my shoulders. I just, one, it's cold inside. But two, I just feel better. I feel, you know, I need to respect, you know, that they're not so open to seeing or having shoulders uncovered or all that. So I get it.
Yeah, I know. And we have those too. I remember we had this one woman, she was from Australia. She was a dancer. Oh, bless her heart. I hope she comes on here. But she's left a while back, but she never wore a bra. So she would wear like loose, like, and then we had this other woman who she was from Italy, and she was, oh my goodness, she was hilarious. She would come in whatever, and she was kind of like rock grungy, and she would always have a cigarette in her mouth and drive in her golf cart, and was just like no bra. It was so funny, because a lot of Europeans, right, they're gonna have an open mindset, even more so sometimes than Americans,
right,
in terms of clothing and whatnot. So yeah, it's funny, but I agree with you. Like sometimes you're just like, you know what? And no one's going to like come up to you and say, ma'am, you need to cover. Like no one's ever said that to me, but there's just this air.
Yes. Yes.
There's an air and there's like a tension, and they're like, okay, people are staring. If you're not used to stares, you know, I've just come to the point where I'm like, it's impolite to stare. Like, I just tell people that. I'm like, and then whether they understand English or not, I'm like, it's just not, it's not nice. Like, don't stare. It's just not nice.
No.
But one thing I wanted to talk about was when you talk about the chanting. So we did the Om chant many, many times, and it was so awesome and so sacred in the vibrational feeling of everyone in harmony. What is, like, how would you present the Om, and how would you describe it? Like, why is that something that we do?
The Om is a very sacred sound. And it's been known, and I guess research has come out about too, as people keep touting it as the sound of the universe, if there were a sound for the universe, where, you know, if you take out all the other sounds, but the sound of the universe. And so yoga gurus, like for centuries, have been, you know, touting this. And so finally research, I think scientists took up the cause and were like, well, we're going to find out. And there's actual research now that is this sound, this Om sound, this vibration that happens when you chant it. And that is the sound of the universe, which is kind of cool that finally sciences can back it up, where all these people knew this before all the technology and all the different appliances around and electricity, you know, and it was just nature, right? Just being with the earth or with the planets, you know, the universe. So it's kind of cool. And it's interesting because it's represented around the world as OM. And I think that comes from its old Sanskrit writing. It looks like an O and an M with the mm-hmm. Sanskrit, almost like cursive-ish. Mm-hmm. And so it's represented with that, but it's actually mm-hmm. like when you pronounce it or when you chant it, it's A-U-M. So it's Aum, instead of Om. So it's kind of one of those things, like I'm hoping, you know, I know I teach it to my students the proper way and the way where it should start. It should start in your belly with the ah, and the ooh starts to come up into your chest. And then that last M is almost like an N. It's like a little humming sound that goes right up to your forehead, your third eye, right there between your eyebrows. So right there to that sixth chakra is when it where it should vibrate right at the end. And hopefully you're feeling that vibration through your whole body each time. It takes practice, right? But I'm hoping that I've taught it enough to my students, and my students are starting to get it. And it's so nice in a class because I open a practice with it and I close a practice with it.
So do you do the, you don't do the om with the kids, right?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Just because there's so many Muslim kids and I don't know how they would take it sometimes.
Sure.
So it's a little hard.
I'm sure even the mindfulness sometimes might be a little like okay, but oh, I was gonna say that when I st like I didn't start like I had okay, so I did like a lot of gym yoga. Like when yoga was offered at my gym, I would go to LA Fitness or whatever. And so I would go and take yoga class. My mom's always been into yoga and my stepdad. And so we'd sometimes go, and I always knew like, oh man, like I was a dancer. And so I was always very physically active. And so as a dancer, yoga for me was just like playtime, right? I was just like, oh, this is no problem. Like I always had flexibility. I have very flexible hips, very flexible
Oh, you're
hamstrings.
so lucky.
So some of these poses where like my challenge is finding the stillness and then you know what I mean? 'Cause and then now that I'm older, the poses that I have very broad shoulders and I'll now that the curse to flexible hips is you also get because you can hyperextend into those hips, you can get a lot of issues, right? Because so then so yeah, so my hips and my shoulders being so broad, and now I've built like a lot of muscle too from doing like CrossFit and weights my whole life, and a lot of the poses are hard for me because of the broadness of my shoulders. So and then so yeah, so it used to be just something where I was like I would just like wave off like oh this is so easy, right? And then from high school and then into college, and then what I was going to say on the ohm is I used to feel really, really self-conscious and embarrassed to do those things or to let my own voice become a part of it in classes. And so it wasn't well into adulthood for me that I felt comfortable, you know, allowing myself to use the word om and to engage in that. And even the lion breath that I remember the first time that I had done that, and I was just like trying not to laugh, you know, and not, and so anyways, it's, I think maturity, right? Like, just like, yeah. So it's, I'm in a point where I'm like, I'm down for anything.
Yeah, definitely. I try to introduce, like, when I do younger kids' classes, like even five, sixth, seventh grade, you know, those ages, I try to introduce the lion's breath to them just because it is funny and silly and they can laugh at it. And it's one of those introductions of like, hey, I can be silly for, you know, three breaths. That's funny. You know, that kind of thing. But it's kind of nice. Like, it's interesting how you say, like, it's hard. Like, I can hear in classes at the beginning of class, people that are hesitant about they want to chant, but then they're not sure and they hear everybody else, so they want to try. And you can hear them try. And then at the end of class, there's like this little shift inside. It's like, you know, the chakras align, the energies align. And the om is so much different at the end of class compared to the beginning of class. Like, it's like this little unison. Everybody's kind of like found their vibration to go along with everybody else's. And I always, always, always love that. Like, it's like one of my favorite parts. And that was something I really, really missed when we had to do classes online, like during COVID. I missed hearing the other people om. And so the first time I was able to have a in-person class and we were able to chant at the end, I cried. I cried. I was like, oh my gosh, this was so beautiful. Thank you all for being here. Like, it was just so nice to have that sound again in my life.
Break that sound barrier again. That's so cool. So the other chant we did was, and I always get this wrong. I keep like switching the first letter
Yes,
of
so
the word.
hum.
I can't, I was like, ho sum. You're like, no, so hum. So when we did the so hum, maybe you can, I'll let you talk about that. And then I'll tell you the experience I had when we did that, but just explain a little of so hum.
Well, so hum is a chant. You can do it out loud or internally. And a lot of times people choose to do it internally, like say it inside their mind. And then every time you inhale, you think the word so. And every time you exhale, you think the word hum. And
Hum.
so hum is basically, it means I am that I am, or for short, I am. So you're just a full statement, I am, you know, and you're just breathing that I am, I am. And there's no need to add on any descriptions. You are, you know, you just, I am. That's how it is. And it's a nice one just to sit with.
I am. And then like, period.
Full stop. Yep.
So when we did this, I actually started to cry. And I wasn't really understanding why. And I didn't, again, I'm at the point in my spiritual journey where I'm not analyzing anymore. I'm not asking myself why. I'm not trying to figure out, okay, if I have deja vu, what am I supposed to do if I have deja vu? No, don't worry about what you're supposed to do. Just let it happen. When that happened and I'm like welling up in my eyes with tears, and it was almost like I was giving myself this space to recognize my inner self. And recognize that higher self. And when you find that, it's just such a beautiful thing, because that inner self has been waiting to be recognized. I think it was just kind of like, oh my gosh, you see me. Like, I see me. I saw myself and I recognized myself and gave myself that honor and that recognition. And it was just really, really beautiful.
That is a wonderful experience.
Yeah. So I didn't want to share that in the class. So I... I was like, I'm just going to keep this to myself and just hold this in.
Yeah. And, you keep it there, like just for a while, just keep it for yourself. That's awesome.
Yeah. But that was something that was one of the many wonderful things during the retreat. And then the other awesome experience was the mala beads. So explain the mala beads, please.
Yay. Hopefully you're using them. But yes, the mala beads are very similar to here in Arabia. We have prayer beads. And they have different numbers on theirs based on how long they want it to go, or they can range anywhere from, the prayer beads here in Arabia are anywhere from, I think, 20 to 1,000.
Like, oh, wow.
I know, it's crazy. But yeah, for a mala bead for yoga intenses, for that mindful meditation, for the japa meditation, you would have 108 beads. So you have 107 beads and then one guru bead, which is a little bit different or bigger, or signifies all the teachers you've had in your life. So when you're using these, you're meditating or finding that clarity or whatever, but you're also paying homage to all the people that have taught you something in your life. And then basically one by one, you sit and you use your right hand, your first finger and thumb, and you hold the first bead after the guru bead, and you think some positive intention or some type of mantra, something you want to manifest in your life, something that you need to just sit with. Usually for me, it is, I am happy, I am healthy. So you'll say that, and then you'll slide the bead and go to the second bead. And so you do that nice and slow with your breath, and you go around the 107 times, you get back to the guru bead, and then you just kind of sit and be like, am I good? Am I done? Or do I need to go more? And if you need to go more, you'll go back again. So you never really cross over the guru beads. You never cross over your teachers. You're always respecting them. And then you go back around the other way 107 times. And then again, contemplate, am I ready? Am I done? And you then would put them away, and then take them out again next time you use them, and you just sit and use them. And they're really great. They're one of the first ways I started meditating. I'm a very tactile person, and just sitting and not thinking about anything was so hard for me. I was like, okay, you know, like I didn't get it when I started.
Somebody
introduced these to me and say, here, hold these, and this is what you do. And I was like, oh, I love this.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. That was nice.
Yeah, the intangible meets the tangible is where the magic really does happen sometimes.
Yes.
So the other thing I wanted to say, even when we were sitting down making them together, it was such a fun time, like, because we were able to connect outside of just like yoga and meditation. We were actually like people sitting down talking, but making our mala beads. So that was an awesome time. I'm so glad you did that. And, you know, the thing about yoga retreat per se is, again, sometimes it involves an entire trip or airfare or, okay, you know, how far am I going for this? Prior to COVID, I was like, I need this in my life. Okay. So there was actually a, I'm a spin instructor, and there's spin events all over like Europe and Middle mm-hmm. East. There's like a huge spinning mafia of people. They're master instructors. And so when they put on like events, everyone comes to these events from all, like they have them in Italy, they have them in mm-hmm. Portugal, they have them everywhere. So it's a reason to travel, but then it gives you purpose, you know, for the trip. And you also, if you're an instructor, you get like, you know, continuing education credits and all that good stuff. So I went to this one in Abu Dhabi, and it was called Balance. And it was not only spinning, but they incorporated all, there was like boot camp classes you could do. There was yoga, and they incorporated, I wouldn't say forced yoga, but there was in the actual itinerary, it was like spinning, then yoga, spinning, then yoga. And so the whole concept was about balance.
Oh, yeah.
And how you have to like balance, you need balance in your life, whatever that is for you. Mm-hmm. So from that point on, I was like determined to incorporate yoga practice into my life to balance all the other crap that I did that was really intense and hard on my body and my joints and my muscles. I noticed that if I keep up with my yoga once or twice a week, how much better my body feels just in general. And I'm able to recover better. And, you know, my workouts obviously as a result are better.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, okay, like a year or two later, I was like, I need to do like a more intense type thing. So I started researching yoga retreats. So like this one pops up in Kerala. I, you know, WhatsApp them and I kind of get the info, and I was like, okay, I am going to go ahead and go do this. And so I set the dates. I get onto the plane. I think it was, I don't know if it was Sri Lankan airline or what, but I'm like the only white person on this plane. And we get there and like they send the car for me, and I'm like completely by myself. I wasn't meeting anybody there. I just like went to this little, it was called Ayurvedic Elephant Pass Ayurvedic Yoga Retreat. Okay. It's this little tiny place off like this river in Kerala. I ate nothing but vegetarian food, Ayurvedic foods. Mm-hmm. I met with a doctor every day, and we did yoga twice a day, and we got Ayurvedic treatment, hot oil. Like they would beat me with like this thing. Yep. And then use like the clay of the, it's like ghee and like cow milk mixed together. And they would like put this stuff, and it drew out like all the toxins in my body. It was crazy. Like my whole face broke out and everything. I think all the time, and not having meat for 5 days for like the first time in my life was, was kind of crazy. But anyways, and then COVID hit, and then like, I never have had a chance to do anything like that again. Mm-hmm. So like when you had the opportunity to do a yoga retreat right here without me having to get on a plane or go anywhere, I jumped at the opportunity, and I hope a lot of people catch the bug, and as you offer more, you know, they can join, because it's so awesome. And I was I was so grateful you were able to do that. And the other thing I wanted to say is about the Hosam. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay, so the Hosam with the term
Soham. Sorry.
Okay.
You mixed it around. Soham.
See, I wrote it down. I wrote it down wrong. That's what it is. Soham.
Well, you might have gotten confused with dim sum, like from one person in the retreat was thinking of dim sum.
Oh, that's right. So what's so funny is when I went to Google Hosam, all that was food. And I'm like, what? Oh. I was like, wait a second. Because I was trying to like research more into it. Like the whole concept of I am uh-huh. has been huge synchronistic-wise for me. Because yes. I've got like this app came up called I Am, and it's this app that sends you affirmations throughout the day.
Oh, wow.
And so a lot of like, yeah, so like a lot of synchronistic things have been happening with the term I Am with me since then. So I just wanted to share that with you. I knew you'd think that was cool.
That is very cool.
But so yeah, it was funny when I went to go Google it. I'm like, why is food keep popping up? I don't need, because I had it. And then when I texted you, you're like, no, it's Soham. I'm like, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. But anyways, so yes, I, you have a YouTube channel, right?
Correct. Audrey's Yoga.
Audrey's mm-hmm. Yoga on IG.
Correct.
Okay.
And then I have my own website, audreysyoga.com.
audreysyoga.com, and I'll put all that into the show notes. Anything else you want to want to share or feel you want to educate?
Oh, educate. Yeah. If you're listening and you're like always had this inkling of like, oh, I would like to try yoga, or I'm not going to be good at yoga because I'm not flexible. You're the perfect candidate. Like, you know, you don't do yoga when you're flexible, just as you said, like, cause then you're like, no, this isn't that great. You know, you find something different to do, but it's so much more than the physical. It's, you know, can you sit in discomfort? Can you, you know, can you acknowledge that your body has limitations, and can you accept that? Can you accept who you are? Mm-hmm. You know, can you work through something? Can you make it a practice? Can you accept it into your life and then have that be part of your journey every day, is just to do this beautiful thing, to move your body, to sit with your mind, and then just kind of accept who you are. You know, that's kind of the ultimate goal of yoga. It's not necessarily, can I put myself in all these crazy poses? Like, all these crazy poses help you lubricate your body, align your energy, help you work through things that are going in your mind. They give you that physical presence in your body, but it's the long-term stuff. You know, it's the stuff, how you feel after class. It's how you deal with problems. It's how you realize, like, okay, this is hard right now in my life, but it's going to get better. Just as in yoga class, like, you'll find there'll be a challenging place, you know, and I have like little areas in my class where I like to make it hard. And, you know, people are like, oh, it's so hard. I said, you'll be fine. In about 5 more breaths, we'll be done and you'll be happy. You know, and just being able to acknowledge that, to see the correlation between yoga and your life, you know, and just how you live in the world, is one of the things that I think gets overlooked a lot. I think a lot of people tend to take yoga classes because it's becoming more trendy. Like, there's more opportunities. People are seeing that it's good. Even businesses are now saying, like, here, we're going to bring in a yoga instructor because we know it's good for you mentally and physically. And so some people are like, oh, check, I do yoga, you know, instead of like actually practicing yoga. So there's a difference. Like, I like always say, oh, I do yoga. It's like, oh, that's great. How long has that been, you know, and whatever. And if it's just a short time, yes, they're just doing yoga. But eventually, like, I like to say, I practice yoga. I practice yoga every day. So it is, it's a practice. It's something you want to draw into your life. But if you've ever thought about it, go out, find a class, use one of my videos online. You don't have to go anywhere for that. And just give it a try. You know, like, there's nothing, you're not going to lose anything by giving it a try. Just like long ago when I first tried that one class, I really was kind of skeptical. I was like, yeah, you're basically stretching.
Right.
I felt so good afterwards. There's something about the combination, the breathing. I felt so good that it empowered me to go back again.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, I forgot, but breath work. So how would you say importance, like, breath work is so amazing. I don't think people realize how important breath and the different ways you can utilize your breath and breathing.
Yes. We're in our world, in our society right now, especially, there's so much pressure, I feel, or so much stress, or pressures around living these days. Unfortunately, we are very shallow breathers. We basically breathe from our collarbones, like, to mid chest. We basically just use like a fourth of our lungs, and we're taught in this, you know, this very, you know, Western health conscious society, you know, you got to suck it in and look tall and thin and all this. And it's just, you need to let your belly expand, right? Like, and it took me a while to understand that. I'm like, you want me to make myself bigger on my belly? Are you kidding me? So that whole idea of trying to breathe down into your belly, because when you breathe down into your belly, your diaphragm, which is just underneath your lungs, pulls down with it. So it allows more air to come in, you know, and actually utilizes your whole lungs, because your lungs go from your collarbone all the way down to your lowest rib, you know, so that, like, your lungs are big, you know, like, your rib cage protects them. And for us to only use a quarter of that is just underutilized. One, oxygen for our body, right? But then also just a way to connect with our body with that breath and see how the breath can affect stress levels, mental levels, physical levels, right? When people are stressed, right, and they're feeling stressed, the first thing they do is they take a deep breath in and they sigh it out.
Right.
Because your body knows like, oh, you need to de-stress, and it feels so good.
Yeah.
And if you were to, and then pranayama is a whole other sector, you know, it's like you have the eight limbs of yoga, and it's its own little limb of yoga, pranayama. And some people only practice that, you know, as our body ages, obviously the physical practice goes less, and then people get into meditation and then more into breathing practices. And that's sometimes their yoga practice is a breathing and meditation practice. And they find they have the same benefits because they're breathing deep. Their body doesn't need to move as much as it did in the past. And they feel that awesome goodness that they do from, you know, a physical yoga practice, but they feel it with just the breathing and the meditation, which I think is amazing. So I'm starting to try to incorporate more of that into my, when I do like a full on practice, I try to do, you know, breath work, meditation, physical, and then again, breath work at the end before I end. Mm-hmm. And I just feel a difference in me. Like I can see the breathing practices really, really help.
Yeah. So I've just recently gotten a little bit more into breath work too. And one of the things, there's two different quick ways. And so one of the things I have learned is you do 20 quick ones and one long in and out. So I do 20 quick in and outs and then one super long in and release. And I'll do that a few times. That one's been really helpful. And then the other one I read about, I think just yesterday, was you take a deep breath in and then you take one more. If you feel like you've taken as much as you could in, you go just a little bit more in to get into those capillary sacs way down at the bottom.
Yes.
And then you have one long release.
Yes.
And so, yes, like the studies scientifically are showing that there's all kinds of really great things that happen in your body if you do these practices with your breath that release serotonin, that can possibly release DMT. That's not quite proven quite yet with scientific research, but the DMT from your pineal gland has been a theory to release. So you're getting a natural high. You're getting a natural ascension in consciousness from simply breathing a certain way. And so then you're living in an, I don't want to say an altered state of consciousness, but you're in an elevated state of consciousness.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the goal. Like rise above the 3D and kind of like navigate life a little differently.
And they're actually using it more and more, breath work and yoga, with people with severe depression, with anxiety, with addiction. Like it's just this thing that it does. It helps them build up those serotonin levels so that they're feeling better about themselves. Like it produces that good feeling in your body.
Yep.
So that when things are bad, like they don't take you down to the doldrums. They don't take you to your lowest low. You can see them and be like, yeah, this is bad. Okay, I feel bad, but I have a tool that can make me feel better, which I think is awesome.
Absolutely. When I worked in one of the drug rehabs I worked in, they incorporated yoga into their 30-day program, and all the patients were just like they loved it. They couldn't wait to get to yoga. I think it was like once or twice a week they brought in a yoga teacher for them. And yeah, it was a crucial part of their programming in recovery. So absolutely. So much good stuff. I'm so glad you came on my podcast. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me. And it's anytime I can talk about yoga, I'm super happy.
Yes, I appreciate it. And I can't wait to hear more. And I know I'm going to see you again in the future very soon. So
for sure. I'm trying to plan my next retreats as it is. So I'm busy doing that little side hustle for now, but pretty soon it's going to be full-time hustle.
Yeah. And so, I you know, you might have like a bum rush of people. so that's my fault, but I hope, you know, my four listeners will definitely join your next retreat.
Yay!
And
we have five now, 'cause I listen.
Oh, there you go. So my five listeners. I just appreciate you and all that you've done and that you're doing. And I wish you the best of luck. And I hope you have the great rest of your day. Do you want to close with an aum, or is that weird?
I don't mind.
Okay.
I'm always fine with that.
Okay. We can
try. You
want to
do it with me?
Yeah,
let's do it. Okay. All right. Exhale fully. Inhale. Ooh. Namaste.
Namaste. Thank you, Audrey.
Thank you, Kim. Have a great day.
You too, love.
All right. Bye.